Crude oil is crude. Natural gas is pure. That's why Pennzoil's base oil is made from natural gas, not crude. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
I was hoping that we would have some news about Major League Baseball by the time that we got to the end of June or near the end of the June. Nothing so far. Joining us right now on the Sprint People's Hotline is former Major Leaguer, three-time All-Star, four-time Gold Glover, Brett Boone, joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Brett, good to talk to you again. How are you?
Good. How you guys doing this Monday morning? No baseball still.
Not yet.
Y'all screwing it up. The players, y'all screwing it up.
I'm telling you, man, I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted talking about it. I thought this thing would be done long ago. I know how these things go. It's business. It's big-time business. But at some point, I've looked at it from all perspectives. I know how the owners are, and I know how they can be, and there's a lot of mistrust in that room, trust me, from just the history. But we're getting to a point now where the games are getting lowered. My concern, as you know, now as taking my player hat off and being a fan, is I think they've gone through several emotions. You know, we have the lockdown, we have country going through some crisis, and now all of a sudden, oh, baseball is a possibility. That gives some people, you know, some hope. It's all right, I'll have something to watch live, and then to watch this play out in the back and forth. And, you know, then I think it went to the fans getting mad. You know, why can't these guys come to an agreement? There's so much money. And then it comes to a point of kind of resentment. And then it's to a point of, I don't give a crap. And you never want to get your fan base in the I don't give a crap mode. But, you know, you're down to 60 games now from what I'm gathering. The current offer, 60 games, full prorated, which from a player standpoint to me, that sounds like a pretty good deal, you know, being that there's, as of now, if you were to open the season, you have no fans coming through the gate. And that revenue stream is gone, yet the players are getting full prorated. So my layman thinking is, that's a pretty good deal right now. Let's get this thing done.
Let me ask
when
you this, Brett.
When it's all said and done.
Go ahead, LZ.
When it's all said and done, and you know they agree on the 50 to 60 games or whatever, who looks worse once the first pitch is thrown? Will people remember the owners, or they just blame it all on the players because they're the ones who are visible and in front of the cameras?
Well, I think history says that it's always the players, and I remember being a player rep back in 94 when things went, we had rough sledding, and Donald Fear told me, Brett, we're never going to win the PR war in the public. Just chalk that up right now. So where we win is behind the scenes. I don't think either side is going to look good. I think the owners have been exposed a little bit on how they're doing. There's not always good faith in these negotiations. And I was really impressed with what the union came back with. And they basically put them in a box and they said, tell us when and where. Well, I don't think they expected that. And Rob Manfred comes back 4 days later after saying we are definitely going to have a season and saying, oh, we might not have a season. Now, people need to understand also that Rob Manfred is the commissioner of baseball. But everybody would think, well, he's just the mediator. He's in the middle, you know, and you'd hope that's what it would be. Rob Manfred is an extension of the owners. Owners pay him. What Rob Manfred is saying is what the owners want to get done. So it's, I don't know, as a player, you know, when Bud Selig took over, and I had a big problem with it at the time, saying this is a big conflict of interest, being the owner of the Milwaukee Brewers and the commissioner of baseball. Well, that'd be sweet. Well, let me be the commissioner, you know. Looking back on history and on now, I think it's coming on 26 years with labor peace. I have to tip my cap to Bud Selig and say I think history is going to look down on him and say he did a really good job. It's been a rocky start for Rob. I don't know Rob Manfred personally, but the PR and the way it's been handled, I don't think it's given a good look to baseball. This is what I've noticed about the game and with anything. Major League Baseball is a staple. It's a part of our country. It's apple pie, Chevrolet, Major League Baseball. It will be here when we're long gone. No player is ever bigger than the game. No team is ever bigger than the game. No era is bigger. You know, we saw that in 94 where we went on strike. We ended up getting the World Series canceled, and it took 4 or 5 years for all the fans to come back. But it will always – baseball will always survive in the long run. I think the key now is just getting this thing done, getting the product on the field. And you know what? If you have an exciting season and a really exciting playoff, the fans and everybody will forget all that we went through in these last 2 or 3 months from a negotiating standpoint.
What will baseball look like when it does get back?
I'm sorry. Say it again.
What will baseball look like when it comes back? Will it be raggedy? Would it be good? Like what are we seeing?
Well, I think you're going to see, you know, normally we're starting in April, and the guys are a little rusty. We're coming out of spring training. Sometimes you're playing in cold climates, depending on where your team is. So it's kind of getting the kinks out, just like anything, in the first couple of weeks, and you get into May, and now you're hitting your stride. I think you're going to see guys rusty in the very beginning. What I'm concerned about a little bit is, you know, Major League Baseball is 162 games. Now, that being said, what we've gone through as a country, these are extreme circumstances. So we're trying to basically get a product out there. But I think you're going to see the purists already starting to put asterisks up everywhere. It's all this says that this isn't legitimate. This is that. How can you determine a World Series winner with a 60-game schedule? So I think you're going to see that. I was hoping to see at least like an 80 game schedule. I think the map to doing that now is kind of impossible as far from an 80 game standpoint, just, you know, how it works out. They want to be done the end of October. That doesn't allow you to have an 80 game schedule. So now you're sitting there around 60. It depends. It depends how they set up the playoffs. How exciting it becomes, how many teams are involved. I think you're going to have some people thinking, well, this is pretty cool. Baseball is usually a marathon and drawn out over a long season. Now, you know, that first week of games is going to be a lot more relevant and a lot more important just because of the length of the season. I don't know. I think this is kind of see as we go. This is places we've never been in sports, to be honest. So I think it's going to be a wait and see. And, I'm just hoping for an exciting season. And there's definitely going to be a lot more teams in the mix. A lot more cities are going to have that feeling that their team's got a chance, where in the past a lot of teams are eliminated pretty much by mid-season. I think this is going to be exciting in that aspect. But, this is a wait and see thing.
Brett Boone joining us here on The Morning Show. And, Brett, you played in the major leagues for 14 seasons. You played for 5 different teams. So you were around a lot of different ownership groups. Did you ever get the sense from any of the teams that you played for that the guys that owned these teams care about the game? Not necessarily care about the money or even necessarily care about trying to win games or win the World Series, but do they care about the health of the sport long term? Do they ever consider what these sorts of moments will do to the health of the game over the next 10 years, 15, 20 years? Do they care about baseball?
Well, I think definitely. But I think more so now in modern day, 2020, you know, 2000 actually. Back in the day, it was a mom and pop type situation. Where owners, it was family owned and stuff like that. Now it's very corporate. It's very bottom line. I played for organizations where, hey, all we care about is the bottom line and how good our PR is. I played in the 90s for a Cincinnati team where we had a controversial owner, but an owner nevertheless that all she cared about was winning in the game of baseball. So I've been on both sides of the ledger. I think today it's definitely much more corporate than it was back, say. And, you know, I grew up in the Philadelphia area with my dad in the Phillies in the 70s. And an owner by the name of Rui Carpenter was the owner. And that's back in the days of, you know, it was family owned. He was in that clubhouse every day. That was his business and his product. But, man, it was all about the game and winning and the players. And those are pretty cool times. I still think that exists. but not on a grand scale. It's more corporate. It's more bottom line. It's more run like a business.
What role, if any, does the spiking of coronavirus cases have in terms of the future of baseball this season?
Well, I think definitely playing a role. I think we saw that. You know, I fiddle around. I look to certain guys that kind of are getting the scoop. I'm watching Twitter probably just like you guys are watching Twitter. So what I've heard the last couple of days is, you know, I know there was a spike in Philly camp and they had five players. I think maybe broadly, you know, across the 30 teams, I think there's upwards of 40 cases that have been. That doesn't necessarily mean 40 players are sick, but they've actually tested positive for the virus. I think the one thing about Major League Baseball that from a real positive standpoint is everything they do is definitely first class. You're going to have the best medical experts there. They're going to have all the precautions, all the safety measures taken. So from that aspect, from a health standpoint, I know Major League Baseball will be on top of it. And these players are going to be in as safe an environment as anybody going back to work. That being said, it's still out there. I think it's something they're still going to have to deal with. And that might be a reason right now where they're kind of dragging their feet a little more. I heard a couple days ago they were about to take a vote. See, all these things go through in the union. It all comes down to a vote in the end, where it goes from the reps from the National League and the American League going down to their reps for each individual team. That each individual team rep will get his players together, take a vote. Now they take a vote amongst all the reps. That has to take place in anything. It's more of a procedural thing, but nevertheless, it has to be done. And I heard the other day they were about to take that vote and probably approve this. And then we got word of the corona positive test. So that kind of is allowing them to drag their feet a little bit now. I don't know. I think, you know, looking from the outside in now, being a fan of the game, I would say let's take the vote. Yes, of course, all the health regulations, everything has to be above board when we go forward. But let's just get this vote out of the way. Tell the fans, hey, we voted. We agreed on the season. Now, health providing, this season's going to go on. I think it would end this long what if, when are they going to? You know, I'm sick of answering questions. I walk around town at the gym and hey, Brett, what do they play? You should know more than we do. You know, I'm kind of going, guys, I'm frustrated with you. So let's just get this thing on the road.
Brett Boone, 14 years in the major leagues, joining us here on The Morning Show. Brett, good to talk to you again. Thanks a bunch.
Okay, guys. Thanks for having me.
You got it. All right. The players at UCLA are saying, we need some help because the guy that's supposed to be looking out for us definitely is not looking out for us. That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right. So UCLA hired Chip Kelly a few years ago, and they really haven't won very many games since he's gotten there. And then right before the weekend started, a group of players at UCLA asked for some help. They sent a document that ESPN has obtained, first reported by the LA Times. 30 current players, one former player, signed a letter asking that third-party health officials be put in charge of overseeing and enforcing health and safety guidelines, and that the guidelines be clearly and publicly stated. It goes on to say that the players are asking for whistleblower protections to be provided for athletes and staff who want to report violations of any guidelines, as well as the ability to make decisions in regard to personal health without consequences in terms of loss or scholarship or retaliation from coaches in any form. What that means is, hey, over here, Chip Kelly is going to get us all sick. He doesn't give a damn about us. And if we decide not to go to practice because everybody's getting sick, he's going to take it out on us. He's going to pull scholarships. He's going to mess around with playing time. We need help over here. Please send somebody in here that's going to keep an eye on this man.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. That's pretty wild of the players. But it's also pretty wild to think that they would feel that way about the head coach. But he has a track record. I mean, when you think about some of the things, you know, it started obviously the coming out party when he was with the Philadelphia Eagles, doing certain things, getting rid of a lot of the black players and signing Riley Cooper to an extension, then getting fired there, going to the San Francisco 49ers, not doing well there, getting pretty much fired there, then getting picked up by UCLA, and then coming to UCLA, running a number of players out of the building, I mean, half the team left when Chip Kelly came. And so you start to see a pattern that he has put together, and players are there. They see it. They understand. Like I told you before about coaches, you see them. You understand who they are and what they're about. And I'm sure his behavior at UCLA over the last 3 years have been such that players are like, nah, man, this ain't right. Now they have an opportunity to say something about it, and they, whoever, I don't know who put it together, but whoever was smart enough to put this together saw it and said, man, this is a way for us to protect ourselves, because if we don't, this dude might run us into a wall.
So Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who's the quarterback at UCLA, sent out a tweet that said this. Number one, no one said they didn't trust Coach Kelly. Number two, majority of players talked about these demands, but only a handful were willing to have their names publicly written. Don't turn this into a feeding frenzy on Coach. This is about the safety of the program as a whole. Well, no.
See, well, that's good. You're starting quarterback, and your dad has already had issues with Chip Kelly, so I get it.
Okay, but he's actually kind of taking Chip Kelly's side here.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I said his dad has already had issues with Chip Kelly in the past. He's a starting quarterback. I get it.
What he's saying is that, you know, it's not that bad. No, it is bad enough. 30 guys did have the courage to put their necks and their names on it and say, this is what's going on. We need some help here. Just because, and the number one, no one said they don't trust Coach Kelly. No, that's exactly what they're saying. There is no other explanation for this other than we need a third party because the guy that's supposed to have our best interest in mind doesn't. And if we voice our terms and we do it publicly, or if we don't do it publicly, I should say, if we don't let the LA Times know, if we don't let ESPN know, then he's going to come out and he's going to mess with us because that's how he rolls. We have to do it publicly or else. That's exactly what this is.
Basically, and I can, you know, the difficult position that a starting QB may be when their coach is under duress, but you can't pretend as if the statement that was put together wasn't an indictment of your level of trust in coach. I mean, you can't have it both ways. You can't say this is an indictment of him and also saying we need a third party to be involved because we're not quite sure if the party who's supposed to be in charge is going to take care of us. You can't have it both ways. Now, I don't think this is unique to UCLA.
No.
I think when you look nationally and you see the number of cases that have spiked, and more importantly, when you hear some of the comments that were made before these young men even got back to campus, you know, Coach Gundy, Mr. OAN, basically saying, you know, they're young, they'll survive. Let's get them back out there. So you already knew going into this that your safety was secondary to the money that's tied to you playing. You already knew that. And now that you're on campus, you're looking at top programs, top programs, having 10, 20 guys testing positive for coronavirus. And then on top of that, you're looking at your program. You're not a top program. Your coach has a certain, let's say, interpersonal communication instinct that isn't necessarily agreeable with the most people that are in the world. Let's put it that way.
That's
I can
so
see
good.
Why you would want to be, you know, extra cautious, right? I can understand why you would not be all gung-ho and want to say, hey, we need to make sure someone else is overseeing this, because what we're witnessing around campuses all over this country is that guys are getting diagnosed with positive tests, and that the sport itself didn't seem to be that concerned about us testing positive and getting sick. But now here we are wondering who's defending us.
It's so funny, though, to Chip Kelly is a lot to me. He's a lot like, and not the supporting of racism sort of kind of thing that Gundy went through. But in terms of coaching, he got the same type of, like, what have you done to keep getting jobs and keep, like won't you say, why didn't UCLA just say, you know what, man, it's probably not going to work out. It's probably not going to work out the way it needs to. Like, when are the frontline, the presidents of these universities and the athletic directors finally going to step up and just say, man, you know what, this ain't working. This just, we get too much going on. And decide to just cut bait with people instead of holding on to stuff that don't work out. So wild to me how they just, he keep recycling Chip Kelly like Chip Kelly is the answer.
Well, Chip Kelly had a good track record as a college football coach. The NFL thing didn't work out. So I don't have a huge problem with them taking a chance on Chip Kelly a second time. That it doesn't work and that this is how he's rolling, that's another issue in and of itself. There's also this part of it, guys. It's one thing to ask NBA players, hey, we're going to set up a bubble over here. We're going to play. If you don't want to come do it, that's fine. You don't have to do it. If you have, whether it's health concerns or otherwise, if you don't want to come, that's fine. And you can make an informed decision, and there's a whole lot of money waiting for you if you decide that you want to go and play. The same thing with Major League Baseball. If they ever get their act together in the NFL, there's a lot of money involved, and the guys are being compensated incredibly well to go do that. And you guys have heard me say this a million times. I am under no misconception that college sports is that – this is something they do in their spare time between going to chemistry and anthropology. I understand this is a full-time job for them, but they're not compensated like it's a full-time job. So now you're asking these guys to come onto campus, to go into an environment where an infection could be spread pretty easily. You're asking them to go into that environment without the person in charge of the procedures giving a damn about you at all, and I don't get any money? I get my scholarship, which isn't nothing, but they're also, if I decide I don't want to do it, they may take that away from me too. This is, we're asking an awful lot of these guys to go in there and play these sports for our entertainment, to make sure that television networks and sponsors and everybody's getting their share, and they get a scholarship. That is not a fair trade in this situation, and they may lose that if a guy like Chip Kelly has his way.
Yeah, and the thing is when you – think about not only UCLA, but a lot of colleges need to implement a third party to oversee a lot of different things, and not just because of COVID-19. I'm talking about in general, because if you think about the way that some of these football coaches handle these young men, is everything, and it'll probably change a little bit now because players are starting to speak out, because in the past they were afraid that, much like you said, Travis, scholarship's gone, now they're back at home. People looking at them, you know, like, what happened to you? You mm-hmm. had those issues where now players speak out a little bit, but they still should implement a third party in there to just oversee some things in athletic departments a little better. I mean, I know places like Arizona State and Herm Edwards and Ray Anderson, they got a certain way that they run their organization where they have checks and balances. But a lot of these other universities and these athletic programs, they don't have these checks and balances. Everybody kind of are the same. They all kind of
talk. Well, think about it, Keith. What do we know for sure about virtually all of these coaches? They do not like to surrender control. They do not like to let the decision-making out of their own hands. They run these places like dictators, and they are God in these situations. They are the ones that get to decide how long we're going to practice, which guys are going to practice, which guys are going to be here, which guys are going to be there. And they're telling you, I don't trust that guy. We need somebody there. So I agree with you. This is not specifically exclusive to UCLA. It's just that UCLA's players put a voice to it.
They have. They have. And we'll see how it unfolds. We'll at some point, I'm sure, you know, we'll start to hear more as the story continues to develop about UCLA's football program, athletic program, and Chip Kelly's future.
All right. LZ's been asking for something all morning, and he finally got it. We'll tell you what it is next on the morning show on 710 ESPN.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
So, Ozzy, you said it right at the beginning of the show that NASCAR was not the right entity to try to investigate what happened at the track at Talladega yesterday. There was a noose hanged in Bubba Wallace's garage yesterday. NASCAR issued a statement saying that they're going to try to find the guilty party. The FBI has gotten involved. You've been calling for that since the beginning of the show, that this is what the FBI is for, is to investigate hate crimes, and that's exactly what this was.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was happy to see that across the ticker and that it didn't need to be a big push in order to convince this to be properly investigated. I know maybe some people thought I was full of hyperbole at the beginning of the show because it didn't seem like he was, quote unquote, beyond just, you know, someone doing something heinous. But no, this is a crime. This is a crime because of the way that the law is written. There is obvious attempt to intimidate and threaten the life of someone based solely upon their skin color. And when it gets to that level, it goes beyond a sports league doing an investigation. It gets even local authorities doing an investigation. It is a federal crime. And that means it needs to be addressed by the Department of Justice. And so I'm happy to see that the FBI has gotten involved because it also sends a message to anyone else who's thinking about doing the same thing. That this, because remember, NASCAR says we're going to find out who did it and remove them from the sport. Not directly connected to the sport, then how is that a threat to you? But if you think the FBI is going to investigate you and you might end up in jail for committing a hate crime, then maybe you'll decide to use your racism and show it elsewhere. We can't police thought. No one can police thought. But you can minimize the action of bad thoughts and harmful thoughts and ideologies so that the greater society can function in a much more sane and progressive fashion. So I'm happy to see the FBI is involved. This isn't the end of it by any stretch, but it's a good first step in terms of how they want to handle this conversation now that the noose has been made present in Bubba Wallace's garage.
And maybe there is no end to it because, look, football has racism, basketball has racism, the Major League Baseball, soccer, there's racism everywhere. Of course not. Of course it's not. And we'll all try to do better and we'll all work on it, but it's never going to end. But there's that. And then they're starting from where NASCAR is right now. I mean, you guys have seen the same videos that I've seen this morning. The flags out in front of Talladega yesterday for the first time, the first race that's being run since they announced that they were not going to tolerate that flag on the premises. There it was. There now it's outside the track, so maybe they don't have any jurisdiction. But NASCAR's got a problem. They can find, and they will. They'll find out who did this. They'll find out who was involved in this, and that person will lose their job, and they may or may not be prosecuted with a crime. We'll find out. Hopefully they are. But where does that leave NASCAR? Okay, we got that guy out, but your culture of your sport. Like, I understand that these other leagues have racism issues, despite what guys like Vic Fangio says, but NASCAR's culture is predicated on a Southern culture and a particular type of Southern culture, which embraces the Confederacy, which embraces that flag, where a driver like Kyle Larson can use the N-word during a video game race, where another person can hang a noose in another driver's locker. This is not just something that happens there occasionally. This is the culture that's been allowed to harden in that sport for decades. It's just now they're starting. And I guess better late than ever, but we can get rid of the guy that hung the noose. You can get rid of the flags in the property, I guess, but changing the culture of that sport, it's going to take forever.
No, it is. And that's why you have to not necessarily be patient, but understand that they've got to, NASCAR as a whole, corporation NASCAR has got to implement people within NASCAR, you know, minorities, put some people of power, people of color, people of understanding, so they could understand. You know, you think about the Lakers, for instance, and what hired Dr. Brown from UCLA to come in and teach them and show them a way to not just, we're not racist. No, anti-racism. To teach them all of those sort of things, hiring practices of minorities, not interviewing certain candidates, but just hiring them because you know them. All of those sort of things, and NASCAR can certainly use a boost in that area, I'm sure. But if they don't have the people at the table that understand those things, then NASCAR will be what NASCAR is, and it'll still accept doing some of that sort of stuff. You lock people up if they bring a flag to the stadium. Lock them up. Make it some sort of law. Pass some laws where if you bring in Confederate flags in, then all of a sudden you lock them up. You know, and like LZ say, lock the person up that has the noose. Now the next person will think twice about it, and the next person will think twice about it after that.
I don't want to go so far as to say that if you have a Confederate flag, you deserve to be in jail. I'm not going to do it because that goes against the First Amendment. Again, it's not about policing your thought. It's not about policing your expression. It's about limiting the damage you can do to harm society. Now, I believe in laws that does that. In Germany, it's outlawed to show the swastika. And they can do that because it's not in their constitution in terms of the same language that we have.
Yeah, but if you bring it
here in America,
you bring in the flags, even though we asked you not to bring the flags to our events, you still bringing them. That should be a violation. If we ask you, I don't care if you,
but it's not a flag.
I don't care if you want to have them out in the parking lot or wherever, tailgating two blocks away or whatever the case is, do that. But if you're bringing them in our facility,
but even
then
that,
I'm going to take them from you, and it's going to be some sort of violation for you to be kicked out, for you not to return to no NASCAR events again. You can do that.
But that's just not a crime.
But even crime. Like to go back to what you said a second ago, Key, the idea of, okay, you can have your tailgate down the road a couple of blocks and you can fly whatever flag you want. Okay, to LZ's point, I guess that's a First Amendment issue. If I'm not on the property, I'm not – okay. But this is the point. You don't go to a Dodger game and see people down the street flying the Confederate flag. You don't go to a Laker game and see people down Figueroa flying the Confederate flag. You don't go to an SC football game and see a sea of RVs with the stars and bars flapping in the wind. This is a NASCAR thing. So you can push it further down the street where you don't like it or you don't want it in your building, but that's still your customer. you're still selling the race to that guy. You're still trying to get that guy to come in and buy a ticket and buy a beer and a t-shirt and a hat. And this is where NASCAR is totally different than these other leagues. Their customer would prefer to be down the street with his flag and then come to your race as opposed to not have the flag in the first place. This is an entirely unique problem for that sport because these other sports don't do this.
Exactly, which is why you're seeing people try to say, I stand with Bubba, but they still don't want to come out against racism as it pertains to the Confederate flag. If you notice a lot of the responses on Twitter, Dale Earnhardt Jr., some other people connected to the sport, even Marty Smith, who gave a very passionate rebuke of what was done, these people still aren't saying what's the root of this. They're not saying that the Confederate flag is a symbol of treason and that the people who fought under this flag wanted to separate themselves from the United States. And they did so because they wanted to keep black people enslaved. That's what the flag represented. Not made up. That's the history. They don't want to say that, Travis and Key, because they're still trying to find a way to make some of those people feel welcomed. Mm-hmm. And it's a financial play. And I understand that, but you can't play it both ways. You cannot say I'm here to stop the rain from falling, but I'm pro rainfall. But you have to choose a real side and not one that threads a needle, because there are some places in life, there are no needles to be thread. You just either you're for racism or you're not. It's just really what it is.
Crosstalk with George Sedano is coming up next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, George will join us here in just a second. But, Key, yeah, we just saw that the HBCUs are going to cancel their football season. They are not going to play games. And you just wonder. We see it happening in Clemson. We see it happening at Kansas State. You see it happening really across the country. There's a lot of infections right now, and we've been waiting for football to get started because it felt like that was the first one where we're like, okay, we should have a handle on this at this point. Maybe not.
Well, I think, you know, when you think about the canceling of the football season of historical black colleges, you got to also think about the economics and the ramifications of them spending money to travel and do all of those sort of things. They can't afford to do those things. They're not Alabama, USC, Clemson, Michigan. They're not the Power Five schools. And so it makes perfect sense because they don't necessarily have the medical benefits, the medical people around. I mean, it's a struggle just to get a game played, let alone try and travel. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can certainly see how that happened.
George joining us right now. George, happy belated Father's Day. How was Father's Day in the Sedano household yesterday?
Thank you. Same to you guys.
That's correct.
Yes. Key, I didn't know there was a new arrival. I didn't know it had arrived already. So congratulations.
No, I thought we talked about it last week.
I mean, we talked about it briefly, but I didn't. No, not with me. I didn't know that she had arrived yet already. So that's why. Congratulations.
Really?
No, I didn't know.
For some reason, I thought we was on the air and talked about it, but I guess not.
Why don't you follow him on Twitter?
I did.
On Twitter.
That's why I brought it up. I saw it yesterday.
Oh, thanks, man. Thank you.
But I don't even remember what the hell your question was. What was your question again?
Father's Day was good. You a happy yeah. Father's
how long, no, what yeah. he was saying was how long you've been flying your Confederate flag. That's what he said.
Yeah, it's definitely not the case.
George, what was your reaction to the news that broke late yesterday about what happened at Talladega?
Look, what I would just say is this, is while it was surprising on one end, it really wasn't on the other end, right? Like, I think that that's just kind of the way I looked at it. I'm like, really? Yeah, that's what we're doing in 2020? Like, that's what we're doing? And then I thought about it, and I'm like, yeah, that would be the place where this would happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's really unfortunate. It's terrible. I will say this. I do want to commend Bubba Wallace because, man, is he taking all this stuff in stride and just handling it as best as anyone could handle it in this situation that he's having to deal with right now. It's just incredible.
I can't imagine being at that track where there's a sea of Confederate flags outside the track. There's somebody flying the Confederate flag over the track. And then you go into your garage and you see that someone has hung a noose. I mean, I can't imagine
the feelings he must have.
He didn't see it. His teammates saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah. His team saw it. But knowing it was there.
Right. Yeah.
Knowing that you're surrounded by all of this brazen symbolism of hate. I don't know how the man goes into work every day.
It was a Klan rally. He was in a Klan rally, disguised event. That's what happened to him yesterday. And, you know, any attempt to try to make this seem isolated because there was one noose is foolish, is disingenuous, and it's not authentic to the mission at hand. If NASCAR's mission is to really change its culture, what it can't do is try and characterize what happened to Bubba Wallace as one idiot or just a heinous act. Not when you get the flag flying overhead and he's being circled outside the doors, 50 miles outside of Birmingham, the epicenter of so much racism in this country. It's like NASCAR, this is what I meant last week when I've been writing and talking about on CNN and other networks, that the statement was a strong step, but it's all about the follow through. It's about stepping up when it starts to get hot and the heat's coming. Well, the heat's coming now, and the FBI is involved, and I'm looking, and we're all looking to see what NASCAR is going to do, not on behalf of Bubba, but on behalf of the culture that it says it no longer will tolerate.
Well, to your point, LZ, they're in for a long fight, I think, because of what you talked about, that culture, right? And I think that while, you know, it was encouraging that when the Confederate flag was banned and Bubba Wallace was being celebrated, that NASCAR's ratings went up incredibly that particular week. But there also is a deeply embedded culture, as you discussed there, that they're going to have to deal with and they're going to have to face. And I don't think this is going to be something that is going to happen overnight with them. Like, it's going to have to be a constant battle with a decent number of their constituency.
That is true. And that's what we've been talking about all morning long. It's not going to be an overnight deal. I mean, we may, at the end of the day, we may not even be here to witness it. That's how long of a rich history of this behavior has been a part of NASCAR.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this, Key. You always say you want to live to be like 120. So if we're not going to do it in your lifetime, then we're in trouble, I think.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind being that guy sitting on the porch, you know, a while from now talking about I saw it coming.
Yeah, well, 120 may not do it because part of the constituency that we're talking about are the drivers, or the guys changing the tires, or the guys, the pit crew guys, the crew chiefs, and the statements coming out of that sport are not the statements coming out of other sports when we've seen moments like this.
I will say this, Travis, the drivers seem to be all on the same page. To your point, I don't know the details of like the pit crews and things of that nature, but at least outwardly, the drivers seem to all be on.
Well, you go back to the flag issue, though, George. Remember when NASCAR was deciding what they were going to do, most of the drivers were, whatever they decide to do, I'm okay with. And now it's, I stand with Bubba, but they're not aggressively saying, whoever this person is, let's get him the hell out of here. Let's make sure that if you support that guy, you need to get the hell out of here too. They're still trying to live in that middle ground that LZ and Key and I, we've all been talking about, really doesn't exist anymore. And it seems like at least the drivers and the staffers are trying to still exist there.
Yeah, I don't know. I was watching Marty Smith on First Take, and he cited, and now, again, I'm not super familiar with this sport, but he was citing, you know, numerous drivers, though, like citing numerous drivers that went on their social media. I mean, he mentioned a long list of guys that were, like, outwardly talking about what you were saying.
Yeah, they went on social media to say, we stand with him, and that was it. Nothing else. We stand with him. Like,
no,
give us something a little bit more than we stand with him.
Yeah, there were a couple of guys that he specifically cited when he was on First Take this morning as I was watching that went, you know, basically saying we need to find this person. But, like, they went the extra mile, I felt like. And now, but look, to your point, look, this is, as we just discussed, it's going to be a long-term battle. This isn't going to be something that's going to happen overnight. I was actually surprised that, in this regard, that it felt like, oh my God, we had turned this corner so quickly, and unfortunately, we now realize reality sets in, and we haven't.
The Sedano Show.
Go ahead, Sedano. I was just gonna say, let's hope that they don't. We don't see anybody we know climbing through the garage, putting that noose there. None of the drivers or nobody like yeah, that. None of our friends.
Not. No, I'm pretty sure we're all safe here in California.
The Sedano Show is next. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 6. Morning Show, ESPN.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.